The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Terms apply.
Hey, this is Annie.
And Samantha.
And welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You, a production of iHeartRadio. It's time for another edition of Book Club.
Woo! Yay!
You know, I actually have enjoyed having a reason to just sit down and read something. Because I love reading, but oftentimes it would not be a priority for me. So I kind of very rarely did. Or if I did, I was reading a book about like the history of fishing for the Saver podcaster.
Right.
It's not that I wasn't reading books, but like sitting down and reading something that's not specifically for research.
Right. I will say, I think I've read more in this year alone than I have in the last 2 years, which is really sad.
Well, it's, you know, silver linings. Silver linings.
It is. It's true. It's true. Mm-hmm. And I've really enjoyed catching up on some of the reading and then also like opening up to different things that I would have never read. I would have never read Ash, and I thought it was very, very amazing. And I'm going to be honest, this book was something that I was really excited about. I really love any of literature that's based in the South, typically. So for me, this was like, yes, let's do this one.
Yes. So today we're talking about Whiskey and Ribbons by Lisa Cross Smith. And trigger warning before we get into it, for brief mentions of suicide and death, loss, or grief. This one's very grief heavy.
Yes.
If that's something that's triggering for you. And also, spoiler alert-ish, we're not going to give away too much, but this is a relatively new book. And if you're interested at all in reading it, then I would say press pause, go read it. It's a pretty quick read. And then come back and enjoy our book club discussion.
Right. And if you are someone, again, who likes fiction based on South, romance without too bodice ripping,
ah, yes, bodice ripping romance.
You know, this is a good one. And I think it also was a short story at the beginning. So I'm sure you can find that version as well.
Yes, and it's beautifully, beautifully written. So a little bit about the author. Lisa Cross Smith describes herself on her webpage as a homemaker and writer from Kentucky. And she's written several things, from Whiskey and Ribbons to Every Kiss a War, a bunch of short stories. She's won a lot of awards. She's been in magazines. Pretty prolific and well-loved. So yeah. I thank you for introducing me to her. I actually had never read anything by her.
Right. And we had planned on having her on, so I'm hoping that we can have her on later in times, because I am a big fan of hers. I kind of talk about that a little later. And I met her through a mutual friend who is an Atlanta writer as well. So I was really excited being able to connect with her at all. So yeah, this is definitely something that I'm really glad that we got to do. It's not your typical, well, not that any of them have, but this is definitely not necessarily feminist related forward type of thing, but it is related to women and grief and family. So I feel like that's on topic.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So why don't you give us a rundown, a basic rundown of the plots?
Right. So I'm just going to give a short summary, which this is a story with three different perspectives of how lives are changed after death. Pregnant Evangeline has become a widow after the loss of her husband, who was tragically shot while on duty as a police officer. The story is narrated by Evangeline, the wife of the slain husband, Eamon, the character whose tragic death opens the story, and Dalton, the adopted half-brother and best friend of Eamon. And the timeline jumps around throughout the story, just an FYI.
Yeah, and it starts immediately with the death of Eamon, and it's hanging over the entire book, which makes it really powerful, because when you're reading about how happy everyone is before it, it's like a punch, like right. squeezed to your heart. And I've read a lot of interviews with the author, and she's someone who loves words, which perhaps obviously, but one of the reasons she chose the title is just because she loved the sound of whiskey and ribbons. And I love the name Evangeline. And we're going to talk about this later, but there's this undercurrent of faith throughout this book. And so I feel like I can see it in the name Evangeline and then Eamon, kind of sounding like Amen. Mm-hmm. I also love that stuff. So I was very excited to see it. So let's talk about our characters, starting with Evangeline, because we're really seeing her story, but from different perspectives. So for Evangeline, we see her after the death of her husband and how she's coping. Her story opens up with her complex feelings for her brother-in-law, who has moved in to help her through this really difficult time and care for her newborn baby, Noah. Her narrative is really, it's a very emotional one from grief and guilt and jealousy and lust and love. And Evangeline, or she's sometimes called Evie or Leany, she has a bunch of nicknames, tells her story of loss and tragedy. Yes, starting at the end, we start right away with the death of Eamon. In the story, we see her conflicted with the need to move on, but not sure that the timing or even the appropriateness of her moving on is correct, always kind of questioning herself and doubting herself. She also is caught up in a game of jealousy over her brother-in-law's past. But okay, let's go back. The setting of the story, sort of the, if you're looking at a timeline where we, the reader, are to assume what time it actually is, it's set during a severe winter storm in Louisville, Kentucky, where she and her brother-in-law, Dalton, are in the house, kind of snowed in, without her son, Noah, who is currently staying with Evangeline's parents before the storm began. And Evangeline is a ballet dancer slash teacher, but currently is not working due to the death of her husband and the birth of her child.
Right. So our other lead, character that you'll hear from is Eamon, who is the husband of Evangeline and half-adopted brother of Dalton, and also best friends with him. Eamon's story begins with a meet-cute with Evangeline at a local church he works security for. The framing of the meeting seems simple enough. A beautiful woman who works for the children of the church comes to develop a friendly relationship with the officer and eventually find love. Mm-hmm. Within Eamon's story, we see different themes of love where he's a major character that continues that narrative. His relationship with not only his wife, but with his family, including best friend and half-brother Dalton. He's also able to keep in the audience's mind the danger of his job as law enforcement throughout his narrations. His eventual death would also be the opening of the secondary plot for Evie and Dalton to fall in love. Just so you know. He ends the story, which, by the way, caused for me to sit there and sob and cry, which was a hard day, with his journal, which he writes just in case he was not able to be there for his wife or son later on, which we know he wasn't. Also important to the plot is the foreboding. We already know that he's going to die, but it still has that character. It is a character in that level of darkness that you know something is not going to be okay. And the thought process for him to leave the force comes through as well when he realizes that the dangerous part of his job no longer just affects some of the people. Also, with that foreboding, there is the small thought in his mind, obviously, in that conversation that he should leave the force because he realizes that this is a dangerous job. And as before, he didn't have too many people depending on him, but now he has a wife and an unborn son. And if he were to die, he would not be able to care for them.
Right. So he always knew it was dangerous, but he felt this drive to do it. And there's all this pressure on him, not through Evangeline, but through his mother, to quit. And there's sort of this ongoing conversation. And as the audience, it's all the more painful when he dies, because the second that journal is introduced, you know,
right,
that is going to come up at the end and be really, really devastating.
Right. And it was.
It was. It absolutely was. Like, you know, it's going to be. And it was incredibly effective. But he had, once their son was almost born, he had decided he was going to leave. And that compounded the destructiveness.
Right. It was just that so close. As well as the fact that there's one point when he thinks, if Evie ever asks me to leave, I will. And yeah, she never did, which is a whole different other conversation. But that definitely does loom over the whole story.
Yes. And I do want to say, before we move on, I am someone, as a lot of people might guess, I'm not into romance. I generally avoid it. And when I do see it, I'm usually, I don't want to say, like, rolling my eyes, that's not correct, but it's almost like I just don't buy it. Mm-hmm. I just don't buy it. But for this, I thought, oh, if that's what love is like, then okay, I see it. That sounds amazing.
That sounds amazing.
Oh, and it had to end so tragically. Okay, so next we're going to talk about Dalton. But before we do that, we're going to pause for a quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Can I rant for a sec?
Please.
Pay apps are way too public.
What happened?
Some rando hearted a payment from 5 months ago, and I realized people can see my entire history, who I'm paying, like full names. It's super weird.
Yeah, it's weird. How are you paying your friends then?
Apple Cash. It's all in messages. You can literally send cash like a text, and it stays between friends. Random people can't see it.
Did you just pay me a dollar on Apple Cash?
Shh.
Services are provided by Green Dot Bank. Member FDIC. Terms apply.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. So, Dalton. Dalton's storyline starts with his confusing but not so uncommon situationship with Francis.
That's a new term.
Well, you're educating me all the time. And we'll talk about her more later, but I actually really liked Frances.
Right.
And by the way, this is an adult novel. So yes, there is sex. There's quite a bit of sex, actually. So putting that out there. And when we're introduced to Dalton, we see a lot of internal battles he's dealing with of what love is and what it isn't. Oh, I can relate to that as well. But we are first introduced to him. He's a classically trained pianist during Evangeline's narration, and he's playing this song on piano to soothe her. and she decides to kiss him. And this facilitates a much needed conversation of the conflicting feelings that they have for each other, because obviously this is a very complicated, messy situation. And this also takes place around 8 months after Aemon's death and 6 months after Noah's birth. But back to his situationship, Francis is the main interest for Dalton through most of it. I guess it's kind of happening concurrently.
Right.
But through a lot of what we read from Dalton's point of view, she is. And at one point, he considered marrying Francis after she became pregnant, but he changed his mind after she terminated the pregnancy. Not because she terminated the pregnancy, but he just seemingly couldn't imagine being married to her. She does play a role in his life throughout the book, and her last appearance in the story, we see his decision to move in with Evie is the last straw for her. She decides, all right, I'm done. And throughout this narrative, we see there is a role of competition and jealousy between Evangeline and Francis, also some of the other women in Dalton's life, which we will come back to as well. He struggles, too, with his relationship with his estranged father, who comes back into the picture and is trying to reconnect with him, which would take us back to learning how Dalton ended up being a brother to Aemon. Dalton's mother, who suffered severely from depression, passed away after overdosing on pills. She took her own life, and he was adopted by his mom's best friend, Aemon's mother. Later, we learn that there are deeper roots and ties with his adopted family and himself, but you can get all of that and more if you read the book.
And you should. It was a good little twist.
Yes.
So now that we've kind of come down the big characters, we're going to talk a little bit about the minor characters because they do matter. So we'll talk about the parents, Calvin and Loretta Royce, parents of Aemon and adopted parents of Dalton. Calvin is a retired cop who was the influence in Aemon's life to become a police officer as well. So you'll see him being introduced as someone who backs Aemon up when the mother is asking him to quit, essentially.
Right.
And they are painted as the perfect parents, supportive and caring to both of the boys. Loretta worries for the safety of her police officer's son, and both she and Calvin make sure Dalton knows he is their son no matter how that happened. And as the story stretches, we find out they're not necessarily the perfect parents, and secrets are revealed that take a slight turn on how you view them.
Yes. And then there's Penelope, who is the biological mother to Dalton and best friend to Aemon's mother, Loretta. She was the one who taught Dalton to play the piano as well as influence him into starting and owning his own bike shop, which he would often go and fix up when his mother was not able to care for him. And then we have the other ladies, starting with Frances. We've been talking about her. She is the sort of not girlfriend to Dalton, who later gives Dalton an ultimatum when he decided to move in with Evie. And I will say, I feel like I am her to a lesser degree. I'm sort of that wild card who is always doing something, is always got something cooking.
Right.
And they're very much, I found their relationship interesting in that there's clearly a connection there, but it's constantly antagonistic. But not in like a like cruel way. It's just sort of like they argue, and that's their love language or something.
That is their love language. It kind of spices things up for them, and I think he loves that feistiness, as he would describe her to be.
Yes, and I also love how accepted it is that they're on again and off again. So there's like one scene, they haven't been together for a while, and then she shows up at some family barbecue with all of them. And I love how nobody really commented on it. They just, okay, Francis is back in his life. Okay.
Right. Like she was significant enough that Aemon was like, yeah, she can come. I'm going to propose to Evie. You can be our witnesses, essentially.
Yes. And Francis was not happy about how that went down because Dalton did not tell her that that was going to happen.
I don't know if I would be upset or not. I think I'd be annoyed. I think I'd be annoyed.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be as upset as she was, but then again, I don't know that I've ever been in a relationship like that one. So I guess I can't really say.
Yeah.
But
I absolutely am the friend who, if I'm close to you and you haven't immediately told me, not immediately told me, but, you know, don't tell me soon after, I get a little, like, offended that I wasn't even who you thought. You didn't even think about me?
Yeah.
You didn't want to tell me?
Didn't keep me in the loop?
Yeah, which is very selfish and stupid, but you know.
I get it.
It is what it is.
I get it.
So actually, in the book, Dalton has another female who is a part of his life. Her name is Cassidy, which I think she's a pretty good, cool character.
Yeah,
as
I really
well.
Liked Cassidy too.
She's this new girl that pops up in Dalton's life, a sporty, tattooed bike girl who Dalton is currently seeing when Eamon is killed. She pops up after she gets flats on her bike. She stops by the bike shop. He helps her, and then they kind of start doing this flirty back and forth.
Yeah.
But it's super cool in their interactions that she is very understanding, very open, even kill. But she also doesn't hold back in letting him know how she feels.
Yeah.
Which is also nice. And apparently she's one of those cool girls that knew the mechanics of the bike and wasn't just pretending as he had framed it.
Mm-hmm.
which is always fun to see as a trope. But she was a fun little character who, even at the end, even when he was breaking up with her, she sent him home with cookies. That's so nice.
She did. That's one of the things I really loved about this book, because I felt like all the female characters, all the characters in general, but it's just rarer with female characters, were well thought out, and you knew their motivations, and they were complex. And yeah, I generally liked every one of them, which is pretty rare.
Right. I think that's what I love about like Southern Gothic level books, is very character driven. And I love when that happens and you invest in people.
Mm-hmm.
Also, just another minor character who you don't hear from much. She's at the beginning, and then she comes popping back at the end, is Elizabeth, Iman's ex and last girlfriend before he met Evie. She is somewhat minor, but she does pop back up at one point to let Iman know that she was bisexual, which was a fun little interaction. It was supposed to be him coming away from painting a room, looking a mess, running into her, and then being like, I'm married and I'm having a baby.
And her response is, I'm bisexual.
I'm with a woman. I'm bisexual. He's like, and his response was, yeah, that makes sense.
I love it.
Yeah. But then she pops back up again at his funeral, where she actually does, like, squeezes Evie's hand in camaraderie, essentially, and in mourning with her the loss of Eamon and how great he was.
Right. So those are our cast of characters. Overall, story-wise, we see the three main characters, Evangeline, Eamon, and Dalton, moving through their lives and sharing stories. In first-person narrative, it switches every chapter to a different point of view. And the story weaves in and out throughout these different timelines to explain how they got to where they are and how they learned to cope, or how they processed or didn't or haven't yet. Dalton becomes the strength and caretaker for Evangeline and Noah, which he promised to do when Eamon confided in him about getting married to Evangeline, as well as when he tells Dalton about her being pregnant. They call it the pact.
Right. They have a pact that they would care for the other person's loved one.
Yes. Yes. So that's pretty much the plot and character synopsis, but we did want to talk about some themes. But first, we're going to pause for one more quick break for a word from our sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. So themes. There are a lot of themes that we could tackle going on throughout this whole thing, and we wanted to touch on some of the main ones, starting with probably the biggest one, which is tragedy and grief. So, I mean, the main catalyst of the book is the death of Aemon. It's the whole thing is riddled with this theme of grief and dealing with it, and it's so realistic. When Evie is notified of Aemon's shooting, it's heart-wrenching. But more so, you also have the protective response from Dalton, who not only helps her throughout, he's also struggling, but he's trying really hard to be strong for her and is actually depending on Cassidy to kind of let out what he's going through, which is interesting because when we talked about that forever ago in our grief episode, that is the theory of the best way to share grief is you have the person at the center and you focus on them. And then that group that's focusing on that person at the center then branches out to the outer circle for people right. to help them with their grief. So I thought that was really interesting. Evangeline even talks about the marking of Aemon's death by the age of their newborn baby boy. I think she says something like a time bomb, or there's a very pretty sad description of it. We also see the grief as experienced by Aemon's partner from the police force, Brian, who continues to check up on Evie and her family. And again, the very first line of the book is about Aemon's death. So mm-hmm. it hangs over the entire thing like a specter.
And another theme that obviously is fairly big is family and parenthood. There's a couple of examples of different types of bonds and even examples of failures in relationships. We see the adoptive relationship between Dalton and the Royces, the relationship between Aemon and him becoming a parent, and then the realization of Dalton's own biological father and who that is. And I did love seeing these relationships when we discuss biological versus relational within the book. The fact that the family bond is very real, even though it may not be biological. Also, Lisa shows the beautiful relationship between brothers for both Aemon and Dalton, as well as Aemon's father and his brother, who they visit every year to fish with him. And I think that's really beautiful to see open bonds that are so loving yeah. and gentle with each other.
Yeah. And my dad used to do this very same thing of like him and his brothers and uncles would all go on a dude trip fishing. And I loved hearing their hijinks when they got back because inevitably they weren't very good at fishing. And I know there was one story where my uncle, he had his leg on the boat and the other on the land. And of course the boat starts to drift away yeah. and his pants fell down and he wasn't wearing any underwear. And I, as an 8-year-old, I laughed and laughed and laughed.
Oh, wow. That's yeah. a good story though.
Yes. Oh, it's excellent. They always had excellent stories. We also see the author talk about surrogate parenthood, and one reader, Gabriella, stated, In addition to her insular depictions of love and loss, Cross Smith is also making a larger point about fictive kinship and surrogate parenthood, both of which have sustained many Black communities. Like I said in my review of An American Marriage, we don't see enough of these situations celebrated in literature, though it's so, so common and important for many people's upbringings. I'll leave y'all with Dalton's heartbreaking conversation on page 90, of which I'll just quote a bit. I grew up with a man who wasn't my biological dad, but he'd do anything for me. So there are also these guys out here doubling up, pulling twice their load without complaining.
Right. And I think it's also very important that we know that Dalton becomes the surrogate as well.
Yeah.
And it is a clearly beautiful transition. Heartbreaking.
Yes, both.
Yes. And then, of course, we couldn't go by without talking about the theme of love.
Mm-hmm.
There's many complicated conversations of love throughout the novel. The love between Evie and Eamon, Evie and Dalton and Eamon, and the familial love within the Royces. And we do have the triangle, as one review states, a soft love triangle where no one is really the bad guy, but sure is damn complicated.
Yeah.
It develops into a tricky romance with a lot of question of how does this work? But Crossmith ends it nicely where everything seems to have a happy ending, as well as even though there's just like this uncomfortableness when you're reading it, when I was reading it, of like, oh God, what's happening? Oh, okay. But at the same time, it's comforting to know that they're okay.
Yeah. And it did make me really appreciate, because, I mean, grief is so complicated. And as we've spoken about, you can't control what your body is doing and like physically, emotionally. It's just all over the place. And then to have that all tangled up, too, with love, which is another thing you most of the time cannot control,
right,
and get it all mixed up. And then you have the added layer of they both loved this person that died. That was sort of at the heart of bringing them together. So, yeah, it's just super messy and complicated, but really honest.
Right.
And then another theme that I loved that is pretty common throughout most of Cross Smith's work is this current of music and art, because it's the whole book has so many musical references, including Dalton's playing piano and using music to help calm or provide relief during hard times. Also, peppered throughout, we see shout outs to yacht rock and just good old classics from Fleetwood Mac to Bach for Evie's ballet dancing background. Even at the beginning, we see a reference to the term fugue, which has a threefold definition. One, referring to flight or to chase. Two, a musical definition, which is a contrapuntal composition in which a short melody or phrase is introduced by one part and successively taken up by others and developed by interweaving the parts. And three, a state or period of loss of awareness of one's identity of self. So, yeah, you can see all of those things play into this book. And I also want to like touch on Evangeline. She was a dancer. So there's this art that she is making. And then also, because I had to mention it, there's multiple Star Wars references, and I appreciated that.
So when we were talking about doing the interview, I did see in the outline that one of the first things that she had, Star Wars references.
I know. I was so excited. And then I was like, Eddie, you gotta tame it. You gotta tamp it down. There's like three of them in there. We can't spend 30 minutes.
But you were so excited.
I was.
But yeah, back to the music. And also with those words, we have the term finale as well as da capo, literally meaning from the beginning. So this begins the stories. And even ending Eamon's narrative with the term sesera, which means in musical terms, a break in conversation, a line of verse or song, but not for long, but also can be a noun, which means an interruption or break. And ending the book with da capo and the announcement of Evie's and Dalton's baby girl, Maribel Dove Berkeley Royce.
And I'd never heard that word before, but it is beautiful.
It is throughout the book. Yeah. Like, she definitely makes a pointed moments of it just being in there to let you know what's happening.
Yes. And another theme that we've sort of touched on a little bit, but we wanted to return to is faith. So Cross-Smith spoke in interviews of feeling connected to faith and being Christian, not only because of her pastor father, but because of her strong beliefs and faith. She doesn't really speak too much on the idea and notion of women and virginity, but it is briefly mentioned as Evangeline talks about wanting to wait for marriage before having sex. She admits this during a game of strip poker when they're all slightly drunk, which I thought was funny. And even putting the church within the context of Evie and Eamon's meeting. And actually, Eamon, he was debating on whether or not to go ask her out. And he said, God, give me a sign. If it's not raining and it's a beautiful day, then I'm going to go talk to her. And it was a beautiful day. And he went to talk to her. And then there are mentions of prayers throughout, and she also speaks to the fallibility of men and forgiveness within relationships. When you're talking about Calvin's infidelity, the boy's sexual tryst. It's not explicitly talked about or even focused on, but the theme is there, and especially if you're looking for it. Because, for example, when I think Dalton, it's a conversation between Dalton and Eamon. Maybe I misremember. It was a conversation he had with somebody where they were asking him, why do you have to be a police officer? And Eamon's reasoning to me sounded almost religious with somebody's got to do this good. Somebody's got to do it. There's a responsibility. I'll do it.
Right. Yeah, and I remember him talking about that. I think that was with his mom as to why he should. And he even talks about going on a ride along with his dad and seeing the good that was being done as well. So there you go. That is a big, small portion.
A big, small portion, as they say,
of
where words
the book. Overall, even though this is not necessarily a feminist-focused book, we do want to celebrate this being such a successful book that chose to look at loss and grief and tragedy in such a poetic fashion. Her conversations within it, bringing music as a part of it, celebrating family as different as it may look from the outside, what we may say is normal and is not normal. And I, like I said before, I have been a fan of Lisa's for a while. I've been following her and her husband for years when they started the Whiskey Paper online literary magazine. And I loved it because it was very focused on the South, but the strength of the South as well. And I loved that look. And I won't lie, I'm a huge fan of Southern literature. My favorite style would be Southern Gothic, i.e. Carson McCullers, Harper Lee, and now Jesmyn Ward. So seeing a take on Southern life is always refreshing and sometimes really difficult for women to find success in. So we wanted to be able to celebrate when it's done well.
Yeah.
And I think it's a whole episode where we talk about women authorships and what type of genre they can write in or what they're accepted into.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, yes. So it's a really good book. And I was really excited to be able to talk about it and read it and share with y'all a good book.
Yeah. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad you suggested it. And would love to get suggestions from you listeners as to what book we should do next for book club. Some of you have sent in Untamed, and then there's another one a couple people have sent in that's about sex. Come As You Are. So those are in the docket. I'm excited to read both of those. But if you have any other suggestions or if you want to vote on one of those, please email us. Our email is stuffmediamomstuff@iheartmedia.com. You can find us on Twitter @MomStuffPodcast or on Instagram @StuffMomNeverToldYou. Thanks as always to our super producer, Andrew Howard. And thanks to you for listening. Stuff Mom Never Told You is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise, all things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.